That's a lot of ground to cover today. I hope you're ready. Well, we finally got to Samuel. Some of you were probably hoping we'd eventually get there. You're going to see right away what a contrast Samuel is to Samson in terms of like his upbringing and his response to it all. Maybe you'll see it. At least, there we go. See. So our goal today is to get through that section that Fabi just read, and that's what we want to do. I'm not sure exactly how it's split in terms of first versus second, but that's the goal for today. In terms of where we're at, some of you are going to have to backtrack in your minds a little bit, I think, because if our timeline is correct, we left yesterday with Samson right here, where he finally died, and now we are going to backtrack all the way to the beginning right here, where Samuel is born. And you're going to be looking at these first early years right in here. We're probably mainly back in this point right here in this section today. If any of you listen to Roger Lewis's classes on Samuel, one of the first things he pointed out is that there really isn't much recorded about Samuel at all until he's an old man. And that's surprising sometimes when you think about it. But other than that first little story there about when God calls Samuel, all of a sudden, it's like it jumps in the Samuel account. It jumps later on to where Samuel's an older man. And a lot of the things happen when he's already described as being an old man right here. There is the incident in 1 Samuel 7 right here that we'll look at this week as well. But that's basically where we're at in the timeline. So we're going to pick it up back here. Samuel really hasn't taken over yet as a priest. We'll wait for that for tomorrow. And then he actually operates as a judge or a priest all the days of his life, according to 1 Samuel 7. The kind of things we want to look for today, though, is that what kind of life did Samuel's parents live, you know, in terms of like how they were, you know, why did God bless Hannah with this child? And why did Hannah want a child so badly? I think that's an interesting discussion. That's something hard for the guys to understand, really, in terms of like, I think we look at most of the girls and we say, aren't I worth more to you than 10 sons? And they say, no. Yeah, they want their sons. So, you know, and it's hard for guys to understand the rivalry that goes on between women about having children. But I mean, you look back at the story of Leah and Rachel, and it's like, wow, they were about pulling each other's hair out. And it became a very bitter feud there about, you know, in terms of having children. And it's something to which women were looked really down on, I guess, if they were barren. And it was like, it was like there was a judgment of God against them. That's sort of the way they viewed it, because they looked at it as though God has withheld you from having children. But it's a warning to all of us, though, that when God does that in people's lives, we can't just look down on people. If God is doing something in someone's life, whatever it happens to be, and he's withholding something from them, that doesn't mean he's angry at them. It doesn't mean he's judging them. That's just part of the angel's plan, and you don't really know what the end result is of that plan. But don't judge people over things like that. That was the mistake that Peninnah made. So how serious should we be about fulfilling our vows? Because here we go again. Here's another case of where somebody makes a vow, and she faithfully kept that vow. I think it's good to look at what you can learn from Hannah's prayer, you know, that she prayed this morning, and you'll have some good discussions about that. Eli, you know, he looks at Hannah's behavior. He judges from the outside, and he made a terrible misjudgment about Hannah. And that's another warning to all of us, that we can't just make judgments about people and then respond and say that, you know, he could have gone and asked her first, but instead he already figures he knows in his head why she's doing this, and she's drunk. And so he doesn't just go talk to her first. He first judges her and then operates on that. And that shows you a little bit about how far Eli was from really applying the principles of Christ. The role of the priest is probably a good one to look at. You know, what should the priests have been doing in Israel? What did God intend the priest to do? If you were a priest, what were you supposed to do for God and for the community? And I think to a large extent today, probably the closest thing we have to that is our presiding brothers at memorial service. That's your opportunity. When people come to meeting, like people came to offer sacrifices, it is the role of the presiding brother to properly explain and to raise the level of our awareness when we take the emblems. It is our job as presiding brethren to help people realize what this is all about. This is not just some ritualistic thing that we go through of taking bread and wine. This is a meaningful weekly memorial. And the priests, their job would have been when you bring the animal there and you lay their hands on the head of the animal, You can see how the priest could either say, well, this animal is dying instead of you, and now you're free to go do what you want, which is what they wanted to hear. Or the priest would say, you know, when you lay your hands on the head of that animal, you're identifying with Messiah. And you're going to die to sin like Messiah is going to do for you. And you are connecting yourself with Jesus Christ. That's what they were supposed to do. But in this case, Eli's sons and Eli even, it seems like they had moved a far way away from that. So you're going to look at what the priesthood was really like at this time. What impact did this poor leadership have on the community? When there were good priests operating, the people rose to the occasion. And when there were bad leaders in this case, the people just continued in their ways of sin. And yet, what did God still expect from his people? Even though we're living in a time, if we are, in a situation where your ecclesia is not vibrant, it's not really active, and maybe things aren't going really well, because that happens to people. You live in challenging times. Imagine you live back in Ontario right now with all the stuff going on in our Christadelphian community on Unity. We can't use those things as an excuse for like why I'm not committed. It's the community's fault. If you gave me a better family, a better community, then I would be faithful. We are going to read, we're reading about people who rose up in the midst of all this wickedness and they still trusted God. They had the faith that God could work through them. So I think it's probably good to maybe, well, I don't know, I guess I'll give you some maps. It's always good to look at maps. So if you're ever wondering, like, in terms of where we're at right now in the maps, here's Shiloh. That's where the tabernacle would have been. And here's where Samuel was born over here. It's only about, depending on the road you take, it's that's the problem in Israel. You can't just take a map and put a ruler and mark it out and say, oh, it's 12 miles or whatever that would be, 17 kilometers. You have to realize that some of these areas, you couldn't just walk straight like the crow flies. You got to actually walk through the roads to get there. It could have been as far as 25 miles. When you're looking at the priesthood itself, if you're wondering what this whole problem is of eliminating the household of Eli, most people think that Eli came right here through the line of Ithamar. If you want the biblical proof for that, see James afterwards. He's compiling all that evidence in the Bible for how Eli came through Ithamar's line. Here are the sons of Aaron right in here. Remember, how many sons did Aaron have? Just four, right? And what happened to these two? They're gone, right? We looked at it last night. And so all you're left with now is Ithamar and Eleazar. They're the only two lines. And it seems as though there was this constant conflict in the community between those two lines and that God was going to remove. Somehow it was supposed to go through Eleazar. Somehow we think it maybe had gone through the Ithamar line right now. But the prediction always was that God was going to bring it back to this line, and David did when he reinstituted Zadok as high priest. So if you're ever wondering, you get a bit of that in Jeremiah as well, the battling of the lines right there between the priests and all the rivalry that's there. I guess that's the kind of stuff that guys rival over. The girls are rivaling over whether or not they can have babies, and the guys are rivaling over who's in charge. And that's about what you see here going on in this situation. And if you're wondering about the offerings, when it talked about the people bringing the offerings and they would stick their flesh hook in there and pull up what they wanted, that they were probably peace offerings because that's the only one of the offerings that the priest was actually allowed to eat. The others were basically burned. So, well, not the only, but it's pretty much probably what was going on at this time. But when they did the peace offering, you were supposed to sit down and have a fellowship meal, that God was inviting you to have a meal with him. And so there were specific parts. The breast was for Aaron and his sons, and the right thigh was for the officiating priest. But in this case, they weren't happy with that. They wanted to take whatever they wanted. And even then, after a while of just taking out of the pot that was boiling what they liked, they decided, you know, if we're going to do that, we might as well just take it while it's raw. We'll take what we want and cook it up for ourselves. And Eli sort of cashed in on this as well. It wasn't just his sons. He liked, in a sense, what they were doing. So that might be something you want to discuss as well, but it's basically just taking advantage of people. When you have a position of authority in ecclesial life, it's very easy to take advantage of your brothers and sisters and the young people that are there, and it's one of the things that we got to be careful we do not do. So with that, have fun, and hopefully good discussion today on the birth of Samuel and Hannah.